ABC Radio Australia.
New Caledonia is in the midst of a COVID-19 outbreak, but authorities want the public to go to the polls in 3 weeks' time for a referendum on independence from France. It's the third and final vote on the issue, which was set out in the Nouméa Peace Accord, although the date wasn't set. So the decision for it to still go ahead on December 12th has angered pro-independence groups who say it's a major public health risk. But both sides unwilling to back down, New Caledonia's upcoming referendum is looking to be as controversial as its subject matter. We're joined now by veteran Pacific journalist Nick McClellan from Islands Business and also Denise Fisher, former Australian Consul General in New Caledonia. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Marla.
Good morning, Marla. Good morning, Marla.
Denise, I'm going to start with you because I want to ask, how important is this referendum to the independence campaign in New Caledonia? What exactly is at stake here?
Well, what is at stake is the fulfilment of agreements that have been hard won and sorely negotiated over the last 30 years, a fair and an innovative and imaginative collaboration process, which is coming to its culmination in this final third decisive referendum, where we've seen already a progression in the first two referendums. With a majority for staying with France, but a large and growing Indigenous-based support for independence. But just at the 11th hour, we've had the impact of COVID, which the archipelago escaped largely from the last over the last 2 years. But from September, the Delta variant has raged and particularly impacted the Kanak community, which is the fundamental support base for the independence movement. So we knew that this forthcoming referendum was going to be a very close vote. But with the impact on the inevitable impact on the turnout and the mourning processes that are necessary in Kanak culture, I have to say, Marla, that from the viewpoint of the Pacific, from a Pacific perspective, including an Australian perspective, the decision that France has made is the most stunning, the most disappointing, and the most consequential decision it has made in the last 20 years. It will have fallout, not only negative fallout in domestically, in New Caledonia, French Polynesia and Wallace and Futuna for France, arguably in the metropole, and also internationally, the Melanesian Spearhead Group, the Pacific Island Forum, even the United Nations, but also for France's own identification of itself as a Pacific country in the Indo-Pacific vision Mr. Macron has espoused.
Now, Nick, you have reported on and have followed this very closely for many, many years. You know, on the ground from what you've heard, what is the reaction to this standoff? What is the mood like in New Caledonia at the moment?
Well, the opinion's quite divided in that opponents of independence, there's an alliance known as the Voices of No, who are calling for a no vote against independence, they've welcomed this decision. This is the long-term conservative parties who've really resisted the Nouméa Accord process as a decolonisation process. But the anger in the Kanak community, particularly amongst parties involved in the independence coalition, FLNKS, is raw. The Party of Kanak Liberation, one of the two major components of the independence movement, put out a statement saying that this was akin to a declaration of war. I think one problem is that the situation in New Caledonia is invisible in the international media. Yet, as Denise has said, this is a very important moment. And France is gambling that the independence movement has no other options. But I think they've underestimated the resolve of the independence movement to continue on the decades-long quest for an independent and sovereign country. One worrying feature is that France is deploying significant police and military forces in the lead-up to the referendum. Literally hundreds of new police, 15 squadrons of Garde Mobile with 30 armoured cars. The French authorities are saying that this is to support the logistics of the referendum. It's not how Indigenous Kanaka perceiving this, and that's why people are talking about this with such strong terms.
Now, Denise, you said it briefly in your first answer, but there is a cultural point to this as well. You know, potentially, is it being seen as the French government missing or just not acknowledging the relation to mourning those who have died from COVID-19? Because, as you said, COVID-19 has impacted the Kanak Indigenous communities the most. You know, how is that going to play out as well as this goes ahead?
This is the fundamental point, because France rightly claims, you know, from a European perspective, back in Paris, France is doing everything legally. Legally, France is doing nothing wrong. It has the power to set the date for this vote. They argue, for example, the French minister has argued that there is no compulsory voting in New Caledonia. The independence parties have called for non-participation by all their members in this vote, which they have not used the word boycott. They've sought to maintain a peace by not referring back to the boycotts, for example, of the 1987-1984 period. France says, well, no voter is compulsorily going to the vote. So legally, from a European viewpoint, they are doing nothing illegal. However, from their own commitments under the Namur Accord, in the preamble of the Namur Accord, it specifies the whole point of the Namur Accord and preceding agreements was to respect and acknowledge Kanak Indigenous identity and customary institutions. Now, the customary Senate has declared a 12-month period of mourning from the 6th of September. The mourning rites of the Kanak people are different to those of Europeans. The mourning rites of the Kanak people mean that even when one person is lost, whole communities need to go through certain rites. Now we have a situation of 270 deaths since September the 6th. We have most of those deaths in the Kanak community. Not just one loss, over 100 people have died in the Kanak community. And within a month, their voters have been called by the French to go to the polls, and none of the campaigning or mechanisms that the independence leaders would normally use, going out in their customary way to talk to the people, to lead the people, can take place in this kind of environment. And Kanak leaders to whom independence is the most cherished goal have themselves decided that the plight of their people is so important that they will forego the participation in the referendum if necessary to accommodate those grieving rights. So the France, under its own Namur Accord, is not respecting the acknowledgement it pledged to give. And it is not acknowledging the commitments it has made under the UN Declaration of Indigenous Rights to respect those rights.
Now, Nick, if the referendum does go ahead, but voters don't turn out, if they do, you know, decide not to go and vote because of the health risks and, you know, the mourning and all of that that's surrounding this, what is going to happen? Is this, obviously the situation is going to favour the anti-independence group, but what will happen come 3 weeks' time?
I think this referendum, as it goes ahead, if there is non-participation by independent supporters, particularly Kanak, is that the referendum will be discredited on the international scene. Already the Melanesian Spearhead Group has stood before the UN last month and said that they have concerns that the rush to the referendum will not lead to a fair, credible, transparent result. So this has already gone to the UN, this discussion. One feature is the two previous referendums. I reported on the 2018 referendum, and despite disputes over voting registration, participation and so on, both sides, supporters and opponents of independence, broadly accepted the results as free and fair. Similarly, in 2020, there were observers from the United Nations, from the Pacific Islands Forum, and the consensus was, despite the differences, that the results were accepted. I don't believe that with non-participation by thousands and thousands of Kanak and non-Kanak voters, that this can be seen as a credible referendum. I interviewed Victor Tutugoro, the leader of the UPM political party, one of the members of the FLNKS this week, and he said, if this goes ahead on the 12th, we won't be there on the 13th to negotiate. France has set an 18-month deadline to develop a new statute to replace the Numeer Accord, but I don't believe that this will go calmly, and I fear that France is gambling. Finally, I interviewed Pierre Chanel Tutugoro, the Secretary General of the Union Caledonienne, and he stressed that this was coming at a particular geopolitical time. France has just had a major blow to President Macron's Indo-Pacific strategy through the AUKUS announcement and the cancellation of the submarine contract. And Pierre Chanel Tutugoro questioned whether France needed to make a show of force that it was still an Indo-Pacific power. I think we have to look internationally as well as domestically, as Denise has said, at the implications of this. And it's going to be a serious, serious blow to France's role and presence and reputation in the region if this ends in trouble.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Marla Damati. You're with me on Pacific Beat, and you're listening to Pacific journalist Nick McClellan, a writer for Islands Business, and Denise Fisher, a former Australian diplomat in New Caledonia. Denise, you were saying there that, you know, their non-acknowledgement of the Kanak mourning process potentially goes against the Noumea Accord. So if this vote does go ahead, is there potential legal framework for, you know, the pro-independence movements to sort of veto the decision or the, you know, the vote that is made?
I think there's more than just the legal aspect, which the independence parties have already indicated, as Nick says, that they will take up with the United Nations, and the Melanesian Spearhead Group is behind them. French Polynesia has come out already over the weekend and said they will support French Polynesian independence leader Oscar Tamaru has thrown his weight behind the independence parties. But it's more than that. I agree with Nick that the first two votes, the first two referendums, saw France take great pains to be organising the referendum in a very impartial way. This time round, France has not shown the same impartiality. There are numerous aspects of the handling of this referendum, which the independence leaders may point to as being less partial this time. There are numerous examples. For example, they have introduced a public paper on the yes or no vote, what the consequences are for each of them, which is patently biased towards a vote towards staying with France. President Macron in Papeete in July made a major speech on the Indo-Pacific in which he started out by referring to the New Caledonian independence referendum and expressed his hope that, you know, France would not obviously be as beautiful without New Caledonia, and went on to say that beware, woe betide the small and isolated states in the Pacific. They need France's protection. Minister for Overseas France actually visited within the campaign period, which has never happened before. And as Nick says, there's been a major step up in security personnel. All these things, you can argue from a legal perspective, France can say quite justifiably that, well, this time it's the third and final vote and we need to prepare, as they do need to prepare, for what happens the day after, for the negotiations the day after. However the result, whether it's for staying with France or for independence, talks need to be conducted over a transition period about the future. So, yes, those are legally justifiable positions. However, they are nudging the vote towards a vote to stay with France.
Yeah. Well, Denise, thank you so, so much for your time, and you, Nick, for joining the program. No doubt we'll probably be in touch and over the next couple of weeks, but thank you both for your time.
It's a pleasure, Marla.
That was veteran Pacific journalist Nick McClellan and Denise Fisher, former Australian Consul General.